We should focus on doing lighter reps, or I'm sorry, lighter weights, heavier. Goodness gracious, Diz, get your words together. Diz Runs Radio, episode 549 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Well, here we are, end of another month, end of the first quarter of the year, drawing to a close. How are things going? You off to a good start here in 2018? I sure hope so. If not, no reason to panic, no reason to worry, just time to get back on track. So if things are going well, hey, keep on keeping on, right? Continue the positive momentum, continue moving in the right direction. And if the first quarter, if the first 3 months of the year haven't been quite everything that you'd hoped, hey, NBD, time to get back on track. No better time than to start right now. Get back on track and you'll still end up making serious progress towards your running goals by the time 2018 draws to a close. So anyway, with the end of a quarter, that also means the end of a month, right? Which also means, for those that have been listening for a while, you know that today is listener Q&A time, where I basically just take your questions, where you give me what you want me to talk about, and I try to shine a little light on whatever you're struggling with, whatever you're curious about, whatever you want to know, and hopefully, with a little bit of luck, the answers are actually useful and helpful and something that is beneficial to not only the person who asked the question, but to those of you that are just, you know, listening in, and hopefully you're able to glean a little something that you can use and implement in your own training that will help you, you know, continue to move forward this year and beyond, as you pursue whatever running goals that you have for yourself. Before we get into today's questions, just want to let you know that today's episode is another Health IQ sponsored episode. So I've been talking about Health IQ quite a bit of late, which is much appreciated, because that means that they're sponsoring a good chunk of episodes, which keeps the lights on, keeps the food on the table, things like that. And Health IQ, in case you haven't heard, in case you're new to the show, or you tend to fast forward through the opening little bit to try to avoid the sponsor plugs, Health IQ is a company that is all about helping to lower the cost of life insurance for people who are proactive about their health. So us as runners, we qualify. So simply by being a runner, Health IQ believes that you should have the opportunity to purchase life insurance if you're, you know, in need of additional coverage, or you need to get if you need to get life insurance at a lower rate than the general public, who maybe isn't as health conscious. So if you're interested, if you feel the need to investigate, get some quotes, things like that, head over to healthiq.com/dizruns, or head over to the website, call an agent, whatever the case might be, and make sure that you let them know that you heard about them here on Diz Runs Radio. Obviously, so I can get a little bit of credit for sending you their way. But it's a great way to support the show. That for something that, if you need it, if you're in the market for it, you're not going to find a better price anywhere else. So thanks again to Health IQ for sponsoring today's episode. So now we'll go ahead and dive into the questions. We got a pretty good chunk of questions today, which is always exciting. Gives me a lot of things to talk about. And when I know I have a decent chunk of questions, it actually kind of helps me to maybe try to keep my answers a little bit more concise, so that this doesn't turn into a 7-hour Q&A episode because I go off on get a little wordy on some of my answers, like I maybe tend to do when there's only a handful of questions. So before we get in, though, again, if you're new or if you haven't heard a Q&A episode before, what I do every month is put a question out in the Diz Runs Tribe, our group on Facebook, and just say, hey, what questions do you want me to answer? People in the group fire away with some questions, and that's where I pull the questions from. So if you're interested in getting into the group and having your questions answered, or asking your questions to get them answered, and really, I mean, let's be honest, I like to think the group's a lot of fun. I have a goal of making it the best running group on Facebook. Audacious goal, and probably impossible to ever you know, fully know if it is or if it isn't, but we like to have a lot of fun, and there's always things going on, people talking about different things, asking questions, helping each other out, supporting each other, things like that. And if that sounds like a Facebook group that you'd like to be a part of, head over to dizruns.com/Facebook or just search Dizruns on the Facebooks if you're trolling or scrolling. Funny how that worked out, but if you're on the Facebooks right now, just search Dizruns in the search function of Facebook. You'll find a group and a page. You're welcome to like the page if you want, but join the group. Click to join. We'll let you in, and as long as you don't prove yourself to be creepy, we'll let you hang out, and you can engage in all the conversation, and certainly, like I said, get your questions submitted for next month and or whatever month beyond that, and I'll go ahead and answer those on the Q&A episode. So without any further ado, the first couple questions come from Melody, fresh off of her PR at a 5K race this weekend, which is always exciting. She asks, regarding heart rate training, and she says, I promise I'm not obsessing. I can't hit my target heart rate right now. If I try running slower, I get a cramp in my calf. With continued/consistent running and improved aerobic fitness, will my heart rate slow down? Is this kind of like training any other muscle where eventually it just gets easier? Yes-ish, Melody. So this is kind of one of those tricky questions because there's the book answer, and then I think there's the real answer. So the book answer, based on, you know, the readings and studying that I've been doing of late as it relates to heart rate training, you know, from Dr. Maffetone, from Primal Endurance, things like that, is that if you can't run at a pace that's easy enough for your body to keep your heart rate below the magic number, then you should walk or do a run walk interval, something like that. Because the idea is that we need to stay below maximum aerobic exertion, which is basically measured by heart rate with the formula of 180 minus your age. You want to stay below that to build your aerobic base, to improve your aerobic fitness, to improve your efficiency as a runner. And with consistency over time, you're going to keep getting faster and faster. And so if you slow down to where you're walking, now you'll be able to start to run walk. And if you slow down to where you're run walking, pretty soon your intervals will keep getting longer and you'll be able to run it at a steady pace that will keep your heart rate below your 180 minus your age value. And, you know, again, over time, you'll keep getting more efficient. You'll keep getting faster without bumping up the intensity, without working too hard. That's the book answer. The real life answer, I think the answer there and the advice that I would give to you, Melody, is that it kind of depends on where you are as a runner. Now, I mean, we know each other. I work with you, so I have a bit more of your backstory. But just for the general audience here, you know, if you're the type of runner that's been running for a while and you're just kind of fighting the idea of slowing down, or you've quote unquote settled into a comfortable pace for your easy runs, and when you look at your heart rate data, it's still too intense for where your heart rate should be based on the 180 minus your age formula. I would tell you that in that situation, you need to suck it up, buttercup. Slow down, get used to running a little bit slower, improve your efficiency, and, you know, in time, you'll continue to get faster. I mean, that's the formula, that's the science to get faster over longer distances, is to slow down, build your base, become more efficient runner, become better at you know, using oxygen and burning fat for fuel, all those kinds of things that I'm in this big experiment about for this year, and really seeing results and starting to really see the proof be in the pudding, and things are playing out for me in the direction that I would intend. But if you're newer to the sport, if you've only been running recently, you're trying to establish a routine, establish a habit of running, and every time you try to start running, you know, your heart rate just goes up higher than what your formula says it should be, I'm going to give you a pass and say, go ahead and keep running. Go ahead and, you know, keep doing what you're doing, keep building that habit, keep getting into the groove, because yes, your heart is going to get stronger. It's going to get more efficient. The heart rate numbers are going to come down. But if that's your situation and that's what you're, you know, that's where you're at right now, is that I, you know, if I'm going to run, my heart rate's going to be a little bit faster than what the formula says it should be. What your focus then needs to become is not so much getting faster as in running harder, you know, for races, for workouts, things like that, but really working on becoming more efficient at maintaining that same pace and watching your heart rate numbers continue to trickle down. So right now, maybe Melody, I don't know exactly the numbers, even though I work with you, I'm not looking at your training numbers right now, but say 12 minute pace feels pretty comfortable, but your heart rate, numbers are higher than what the formula says they should be. Okay, so let's stay at 12-minute pace, or right around that, plus or minus, you know, 5 or 10 seconds, but basically staying right at 12-minute pace, and work on bringing that heart rate down. So maybe right now it says your heart rate's at 155, and based on the formula, it's supposed to be 140. So we're going to stay at 12-minute pace and work on bringing that down so that, you know, maybe next month, you know, you're still running the same pace, but now that heart rate's down to 148. And then the next month it's down to 144. And the next month it's down to where you're running right about at 140, and you're able to stay there, feel good, you know, not having any cramp issues, not feel like you're running too slow, things like that. But that heart rate has crept down, and that may take 3 months, may take 6 months, whatever, but it is going to be a consistent effort to not worry about increasing your pace until we can get that heart rate back under the zone where we want it to be. You know, and then once you get to that point, then you can worry about, all right, my heart rate is here. This is the max. I don't want to go over it. And you're going to keep getting more and more efficient, which then, you know, as your heart rate continues to drop, you're going to be able to push a little bit farther, still stay in the heart rate zone. And now you're going to be running 11:30s or 11 flats or even faster than that, over time. So, you know, if you're new to heart rate training and you just can't get the numbers to line up where they're supposed to be, the book answer would be to walk, run, walk, whatever you got to do to get it down a little bit lower. And I would say that if you've been running for a while, stick with the book answer. If you're very new to the sport, do what you got to do, but keep working on bringing that heart rate, those heart rate numbers down. And as long as you're consistent and you're, again, and you're newer to running, it's probably not going to take that long. So just work at it, stay patient, stay the course, and we'll get there. The next question, also from Ms. Melody, asks, how can I stay calm before a race? Just thinking about a race is starting to make me nervous. So there's a few things, a few suggestions that I would have for anybody who's kind of deals with a little bit of pre-race nerves and or pre-race anxiety. You know, and I do recognize that simply saying, hey, just relax, probably isn't going to work. You know, if you're asking this type of question, if you really get kind of worked up about, you know, the fact that a race is official, or the fact that, you know, instead of running by yourself or with one or two close friends, you're going to be running with hundreds and potentially thousands of other runners, and having all those people like comparing yourself to others, all of these different things that can add nerves, add to the anxiety level, things like that. Those are real. And just saying, hey, just relax and whatever isn't necessarily going to help. But that said, you know, I think that running races can be a lot of fun if you can get past that extra nervousness, that extra level of anxiety. So a few things that you can keep in mind, and there's probably a much longer list than this. And you know, we can always talk about this again. Come join the Facebook group, Melody, throw a question out there and see what other people have to say besides just myself. Or if you're struggling with this, jump in the group and ask a question. But so some things that I would think that, you know, if you're well-trained, just trust in your training. You know, depending on what type of distance you're running, you may have already run that distance before. You may have come close to it. So, you know, just trust that, hey, this is the next step. I'm fit. I'm capable. I can do this. And really believe that you can do this. And hopefully that will help you to calm down a little bit. Another thing you can do is focus on only on the things that you can control. So, you know, if being around that many other runners kind of makes you a little anxious, or you're afraid you're going to start comparing to, oh, well, giving people the eye test, you know, that person looks like they shouldn't be faster than me, or that person looks like this, that, or the other. We all know that that's not a good thing to do, but it's something we all do anyway. So you know, it is real, but focus on the things that you can control. What can you control? You can control your effort. You can control your mindset. You can control what you're doing. So focus on, you know, what things can I control? I can control my pace. I can go out at this pace. Maybe a run walk, so I can make sure to stick to my intervals. If that's the way that you train and run, you know, Just focus on the things that you can control, following your fueling plan, all of those types of things that are fully within your control, and let the race take care of itself. Whatever your finish line time is what your finish line time is going to be. But, you know, there's things that are outside of your control. There's the weather, there's the course, there's the other people that you can't control. So try not to let the external factors add more stress to the situation. And then another one is to have a plan in place. You know, actually have a mapped out plan. Know that the first mile, you know, maybe if it's a 5K, you're nervous about that. All right, the first mile, I want to run it in this time. Then the second mile, I want to run, you know, maybe just a little bit faster. And then the third mile, I'm going to take inventory when I get to mile two, check in on how I'm feeling, and go from there. And that same type of pattern can play out no matter the distance. So maybe it's a half marathon. Maybe it's your BQ attempt. So, all right, have my plan. My first 5K, I want to be at this time when I get to the 5K mark. And then I want to settle into my goal pace and know that there's a hill coming up. So I want to save a little bit for that. And when I get to the top of the hill, I want to fly down it. And then, you know, with 2 miles left to go, I want to pick up the pace and get to this level. And then when I see the finish line, I'm going to, you know, haul ass and just sprint to the finish line. Whatever your plan might be, but put a plan in place. You know, sometimes anxiety can creep up and the nerves and the all these extra feelings and extra pressures and things like that, because we don't have a plan in place. We're kind of just making things up as you go. So having that plan, if you have a coach, hopefully your coach would talk to you about the plan and help you to come up with the plan. But if you're self-coaching, you're doing things on your own, you know, really take the time to think about what am I doing? What mile markers, what things like that, and put that in place, commit it to memory or write, you know, write Sharpie notes on your arm, whatever you've got to do. And then just go out there and try to stick to the plan. That way you're not thinking, that way you're not getting caught up in the moment. You're not getting overexcited by or overly concerned with what other runners are doing. You've got your plan, you're sticking to it. And then the last thing that I would remind you of, Melody, and anybody else who maybe has some kind of race day anxiety, race day nerves, A, it's normal, and B, you know, it will kind of get better the more races you run. It may never disappear completely, but the more comfortable you are with putting the bib on and running with other people and traveling and doing some of the things that make race day a little bit more special, or at least a little bit different. For some people, it's more special. For some people, maybe it's more stressful. But the more times you race, the more comfortable you'll be in a race environment. So hopefully those things help, Melody, and for anybody else who's dealing with kind of some nerves and some anxiety around race day and races in general. You know, there's other options, but those are the I think probably the biggest ones and the ones that came to my mind immediately. So, you know, kind of I feel like they have a little bit more they work. They do work if you commit to working on them. Ellen has a question. She says, I've been upping my strength workouts to 4 to 5 days per week from 1 to 3 previously. My only big race coming up is a 50K and it's still 4.5 months away. My question is, I'm very intent on building more muscle, but so many people say running breaks down muscle. I'm trying to eat enough protein, but is it one or the other? Can a long distance runner build muscle, or is it too much to do distance running and trying to build muscle at the same time? So, you know, all things kind of strength and you know, strength training and running related there, Ellen. And it's a great question. And really, I wish I would have cleared this up before I started recording, just to make sure that I was answering the right question. When you say you're looking to add more muscle, I'm curious, and it will definitely change the answer if what you're trying to do is literally add more muscle mass to get bigger, bulkier, add more muscle, or simply to get stronger. So to get stronger, but not add a lot of muscle mass to your frame, because the way you're going to prepare for both will be different. And one is more conducive to continuing to do long distance training than the other. So I'm going to try to answer at least the quick version on both sides of that coin, to make sure that we cover you, Ellen, and anyone else who is struggling with the idea of balancing strength training and endurance training at the same time. So, if the goal is to get bigger, to literally add muscle mass, to add size to your frame, that doesn't really mesh real well with endurance training. So, you know, that was the verbiage of your question, Ellen, is how do I, you know, I want to add more muscle, while also training for the longer distance stuff. And those really don't work as well together, because to add muscle mass, to pack on muscle tissue, you know, it comes down to making sure you're eating more calories than you're burning so that your body's creating more muscle mass. You have to run a calorie excess in order to add size. And if you're running, and especially if you're training for a 50K, you know, you're going to be burning through a lot of calories while you're running. You're also going to be obviously, you know, in doing the strength training, you're upping your metabolism that way. You're lifting heavier weights. So that's creating a caloric deficit as well. So you'd have to be eating a lot to continue to pack on muscle mass while training for an ultra marathon. And in most cases, you know, almost you'd have to be working too hard, eating too much. So you'd be better off to back off the endurance training, focus on adding the muscle size, the muscle mass, and kind of going from there. Now, if your question of saying if you I want to add more muscles really means that you want to get stronger, now that's something that we can do together. As far as you can get stronger in by lifting weights, doing the strength training bit, and also still continue to train for longer distance races and not have them be diametrically opposed to each other. So you can do that a couple of ways. Kind of the more conventional older school wisdom is that, as endurance athletes, as marathoners, ultra marathoners, things like that, we should focus on doing lighter weights at more reps / sets. So, 3 sets of 10, 3 sets of 20, things like that, where you're doing a lot of reps, a lot of sets, using just your body weight or using, lighter weights, than what would be your max lifts. Newer recommendations actually kind of flip the tables the exact opposite way and say that, doing some maximal or near maximal lifts, three reps of very high weights, things like that, are actually just as good and maybe better at building the strength, building the power that we actually will tap into in the later stages of a race. So either way, you're going to get stronger. For me, the jury's still kind of out on which is better. That's another area that I'm researching and trying to learn more about. I'm really intrigued by the idea of heavy weights, but not everybody has gym memberships and things like that and access to heavy weights. So we may be quote unquote stuck using body weights and lightweight things like that. And there's still benefit to that. So what I'm trying to say is that either option will work and can very well balance with the training for a marathon, an ultra marathon, a triathlon, whatever the case might be. And is beneficial. Getting stronger is going to make you not only a better runner, but it's going to help you in regular, daily routine life as well. So, Ellen, we can talk more and try to really nail down exactly what you're doing and how to maximize both fronts. But, if you're trying to get stronger, there's no reason that you can't get stronger while still training to run good distances at the same time. But if you really are trying to add more mass, more size, that's where we need to really assess which one you want to stick with or which one is the priority, the endurance or the muscle size, and focus our efforts on one or the other. Hopefully all that makes sense. Now, the next question comes from Ms. Jennifer, who actually has 3 questions. We'll tackle them each one at a time. The first question, is there a speed workout that's the best one? No, not really. I think that all good speed workouts from varying distances, durations, things like that, they're all helpful in the right dosages and the right quantities. They all do different things. A tempo run kind of helps you to push the red line back a little bit, helps you to get more efficient at burning lactic acid, things like that. Something shorter, quarter mile repeats, 1 minute repeats, something like that, where you're going really, really hard for a short period of time is great for running form, for foot turnover, for foot speed, things like that. And everything in the middle, it has varying degrees of those benefits as well. So I don't know that one is necessarily better or the best, but they all work a little bit differently. And that's why it's a good thing, I think, professionally and just for myself, to mix those, to add a variety of different speed workouts to your routine. And you may find that means that you're doing a different speed workout every week or two for months before you start repeating the cycle again. As I get more and more down this rabbit hole of doing most of your training at a sub-maximal level, the heart rate training thing, I'm doing less and less speed work and I'm still getting faster. So, there's certainly benefits of speed work, and I'm actually kind of loosely planning on doing a real, blowing the doors off of it on a speed workout in the next week or two. Really just pushing hard and seeing what happens. But I haven't decided which one yet because like I said, it's not necessarily that one is best, but doing the right ones at the right times, listening to your body, that's what's most important. So, how's that for not really answering your question? Next little question there from Jennifer. What is the most beneficial distance for a marathoner to use to judge their fitness? So I'm assuming that you're meaning kind of like almost like predicting, like am I at top level fitness or kind of comparing from one training cycle to the next? Is there a key workout or distance or things like that? And again, I don't know that there's a real key. This is the one metric. I've talked before about my dislike or distrust, maybe distrust is a better way of saying it, of using like a pace predictor or something like that, where you could say, hey, if I ran a 10 mile run in X amount of time, my marathon would be this. And then trying to use that 10 mile test to gauge how your fitness is going. I just think there's too many variables in there, especially if you're trying to compare, all right, am I really fit and ready to go for a marathon distance? There's too many variables. There's too many things that come into play at the marathon distance that it's just, to me, it's almost impossible to really predict or to judge, you know, compare if I can do X, I can do, you know, in this distance, I can do Y in the marathon distance. I think that's a fool's mission to try to draw those correlations. Cause again, there's just too many variables to really accurately predict one way to the other. That said, I think that a better option is to kind of zoom out a little bit and really look at the bigger picture. How are the overall training runs going? Am I feeling good? Do I have any nagging little issues that need to be addressed? Do I feel strong? I'm you know, my longer training runs are going great. You know, checking in with the heart rate, some of the biomarkers, the heart rate variability, which, I've started to learn more about as I've gone into primal endurance. You know, like how is the heart beating, and looking at that, those internal sources, which another benefit of having a heart rate monitor, right? We can check some of those numbers a little bit easier than, you know, finding a pulse point, which you can find a pulse point and measure your heart rate, you know, that gives you some good information. Is if your heart's racing, you know, when you first wake up, then you're probably not recovered and as fit as you'd like to be. If your heart's got a nice slow tempo to it, and, you know, early in the morning when you're kind of at that resting heart rate, then that's a good sign that you're recovering well, your training's going well, things like that. So, you know, looking at some of the less specific measurables, as far as really running specific measurables, I think gives a good clue on how training is going and how your fitness is going. And then, of course, looking at your training as well. You know, are you able to feeling strong at the end of a 20 miler or a 20 plus mile run? Things like that are going to give a good clue on how the training is going. And then the last of Jennifer's question, why do the first few miles in a long training run always seem to suck? Yes. Been there. Totally agree. The first couple miles, you know, I think there's a few factors that are possibly at play there. I think that one of them is that, you know, a lot of times if you're doing your run first thing in the morning, your body's still waking up. You know, I know for me, it's just like roll out of bed, take the dog for a quick walk, you know, grab the running shoes and go. And sometimes those first few miles, like, you know, the body hasn't fully wakened up. The joints haven't been lubed up yet. Although now that I'm doing the lunge matrix, that does help a bit, to make the first couple of miles not as difficult as in the past. So I'm getting a better warm up in. But it just takes a little while to get kind of things loosened up, warmed up, and to find it, kind of find your groove, you know, find your stride, settle into your intervals, whatever it is that you're doing on a training front, to really kind of get comfortable. And then I think also there's a little bit of mental battle that at the beginning, it's like, oh God, I've still got, you know, 12 miles to go or 18 miles to go or whatever the long mile run is. But as you go, you're like, all right, chipped a few miles away, I'm down to only 10 miles now and down to single digits. And you start to get that psychological boost the longer you go, that you're closer to to finishing than you were when you started. So it just starts to feel a little bit better mentally. So I think that there's a few variables in there, but I would definitely say that you're probably not alone in feeling like the first mile or two sometimes can be the most difficult mile or two of a long run. Thanks for the questions, Jennifer. The next question comes from Heather, who asks, or who says that the sidewalks in my neighborhood have a pretty obvious slant. How much running can I do on them without increasing my risk of hurting myself? There's enough traffic on the road that it isn't really worth trying to run in the road, and there are plenty of good options nearby, but sometimes it's just too convenient to literally go out my door and go for a run. Heather, you're certainly right to be aware of this and to be cautious of it, because there's no question that running regularly on, you know, a slanted surface, the more slanted, the more, potentially more problematic it could be, that, you know, it could throw off the alignment in your hips, your low back, things like that, which can really lead to some serious problems. And you can also, you know, add different stresses to your body, maybe have a, you know, stress reactions or things like that, because one foot, you know, the feet aren't landing on a level plane, which is kind of how our bodies are designed. So they're landing, you know, your ankles are at a angle when you land too. So that can cause problems. So yes, all sorts of problems could come from that. Now, that said, kind of a couple ways to beat it. And if you're able to get out of that area most of the time, great. But sometimes, you know, you don't have time to drive somewhere else. You know, you want to go out there, get a couple, 3 miles in, but start the day, and then, you know, get on with life. And I understand that. So in that situation, what I would encourage you to do is, and I don't know your exact setup, but hopefully you can follow what I'm trying to say here and it'll make some sense. So suppose, you go out, you turn right out of your driveway, out of your door, and you go and you live on, some type of neighborhood where you can run a big circle and get back to your house. That means that you're basically the entire time the sidewalk is slanted, let's say from right to left. Everywhere you go, the sidewalk is slanted from right to left, and you circle back and you get back to your house. So the whole entire run, you've been angled the same way. Instead of doing that, you're better off to run half of the distance with the sidewalk slanting right to left, then stop, turn around, and make it like a point-to-point type of run. So now when you're running back, the sidewalk is slanted left to right. So it's still not as good and as quote-unquote safe as running on flat ground, but at least this way, instead of constantly always be leaning one way, you're kind of trying to balance things out a little bit. So you're making the hips work in the opposite direction on the way back, which will hopefully kind of help to even things out, keep things loose. And again, I hope that makes sense. But instead of always having things angled the same direction, go out and back so that you're in theory, at least, kind of keeping things balanced, and it's gonna help you out as much as you can. And then again, like I said, try not to do all your runs there. Try to take advantage of some trails, some flatter, safer roads, quieter roads, sidewalks, things like that. And really make sure you're paying attention to your body, how you're feeling, making sure you're getting good stretching, foam rolling, things like that, so that if any little things start to crop up, you're really able to nip them in the bud before they get too much, before they get bad enough that it really causes you problems and really forces you to take some time off. So, all right, that's a question from Heather. Hopefully that helps. If you need more information on that, Heather, please let me know. And before we get into the next question, just want to remind everybody, Health IQ sponsoring today's episode. If you're looking to get the best rates available on life insurance, you are eligible because you're a runner. So head over to healthiq.com/dizruns. You can put in some information and get a quote there, talk to an agent, get a quote there. And you can also take some of the various health and wellness quizzes that are there. So, if you're curious about heart rate training, you're curious about dietary changes, low carb, going vegetarian, things like that. They have all kinds of different quizzes that you can take. You can learn about different things that can help you be healthier as well, which is, again, being healthy is a good thing. It's a good thing for a runner. It's a good thing for longevity on this planet. And because you're healthier, Health IQ, because you're health conscious, Health IQ wants you to take advantage of that and save a few bucks on life insurance as well. So healthiq.com/dizruns. So the next question comes from Anne, who asks, what is your greatest fear when running? I have a few: snakes, rabid dogs, getting hit by a car. She says, part two, how do you keep fear from ruining your run? So at the risk of sounding like a total douche, Anne, I really don't have any big fears when it comes to running. I'm not illogical. I don't think I'm invincible. I realize that getting hit by a car is something that could happen. I tend to run predominantly on the roads. And when I'm on the trails, I recognize that there's, the trails in Florida are all swamps. So I recognize that there's a possibility of running into an alligator or a poisonous snake, something like that, which certainly, get the heart rate beating a little bit and make me a little bit nervous. But I really, when I set out for a run, I'm not worried about those things. I know that those possibilities are out there. I don't want to have to deal with those types of things if I can avoid them. But at the same time, like, I'm going to run. I'm a runner. That's what I'm going to do. And I don't, I really don't have any great fears that really inhibit my running. Maybe that's being a guy, maybe that's some bravado. Maybe I don't have the fear of running by myself at 4 o'clock in the morning in town because I'm a guy, and maybe that's a little bit foolish. Maybe I should have more respect for the things that could happen. But I'm really just not that scared when I run. So sorry that maybe isn't that helpful. That's the honest answer. And certainly, I'm definitely not afraid of dogs. That's one thing that I definitely have no issues with. I'll stare down a dog if I need to. I'm not worried about that. Cars, yeah, you know, I mean, I try to be aware of the cars, you know, snakes, you know, again, be aware, you know, when I'm out on the trails, I'm really watching for sticks that don't look quite right. And even if I'm not sure, I'm going to veer to the other side of the trail if possible. Even if it really is just a stick, like, better to be safe than sorry. But yeah, I mean, I'm really not really, really don't suffer from any running fears, when I'm out there. So I hope that's an okay answer, but, probably not very helpful. Sorry about that, Ann. Next question comes from Marsha. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Got about 6 left, so we're about just past the halfway mark. Actually, 2 questions come from Marsha. She asks, "How do you get a good breathing rhythm as a newer runner?" So this is a great question, Marsha. One of those things that I think that kind of gets overlooked, or is very easy to overlook, because it's like, oh, just breathe. But you're right that sometimes it can be a little bit difficult. You feel like you're panting, and everybody else around you is just seems like they're breathing nice and easy. And maybe it's a rhythm thing. Maybe you're struggling to match up your breaths with your cadence. And those struggles are definitely very real. And in the show notes today, I linked to a post or to an article I read in Runner's World several years ago. I don't know if I mentioned it, but the link for the show notes, in case you haven't figured it out by now, this is episode 549. So we're talking dizruns.com/549 to get over to the show notes. I got a few things linked up and actually have a GIF and or meme for every question today. So you can, I put maybe a little more work than I should have into the visual entertainment for today's post. So you can at least check that out and let me know which meme or GIF you like the most. But anyway, there's a article that I linked to from Runner's World, Marsha, that talks about the idea of breathing in an odd pattern. Not odd as in strange, but an odd footfall or odd cadence or an odd count. So instead of breathing like breathing in for a 2 count and out for a 2 count, which for a lot of runners feels the most natural, it's an even balance. It's 2 in, 2 out, 2 in, 2 out. What you're better off doing is doing something where the total counts, so in this case, 2 in, 2 out would be 4, is an odd number. So either breathing in for a 3 count and out for 2, or breathing in for a 2 count and out for 1. And what that does is that alternates your footfall, so that instead of breathing in and breathing out every time you're, you know, every two strides, which would mean that every time that your right foot hits the ground, you're alternating back and forth. And that can actually help prevent injuries. Without getting too technical, the article does a great job of summing it up. You can check that out if you're interested. But what that does, like when you inhale, you release your diaphragm, right? You relax your diaphragm, which creates core instability. So if you're always unstable every time you're breathing in, and you're always breathing in every time your right foot hits the ground, we may have some stability issues that are related to your right side. You may have some IT issues. You may have some other tendonitis, possibly shin splints and or stress fractures, because everything's more unstable when you're always breathing in on the same leg. Versus if you alternate that back and forth, it spreads out the instability. It spreads out the impact forces that are created because your core isn't as contracted and tight when you're exhaling, which is a contraction of your diaphragm, and that can help with injury risk, and also can help you find a good rhythm to be in with your breath. So that, I would encourage you to check that out. It took me, when I read that article, I decided to play with it and try it. It took me probably, I don't know, a month or two of kind of being focused on my breath to make it pretty much second nature. And now I don't think about my breathing at all. And anytime I do, I notice that I pretty much always fall into the 2-1 pattern. But if I'm going nice and slow, then maybe I'm more 3-2. But I'm pretty much 2-1 with my breaths. Inhale for 2 breaths, exhale for 1 at every pace I run, and it seems to work pretty well for me. So hopefully that will help you. Again, dizruns.com/549 to check out the show notes. And like I said, I have that article linked up from Runner's World from, I think it was 2012, 2013, something like that. Marsha's second question, suggestions to get back to running after a negative event happens, i.e. I was hit by a car while running. Marsha, goodness gracious. Hope that was long ago, but if that was recent, goodness gracious, lady, hope you're doing all right. I kind of piggybacking off of Ann's question, like, I'm not afraid of getting hit by a car, but that's probably my worst nightmare when it comes to running, is getting hit by a car, just because, I mean, so many things can happen, both mental and physical damage that can be caused, that, I don't, I'm not afraid of it, but I really don't want to think about it. And if that has recently happened to you, Marsha, goodness gracious, hope you're doing okay. Hope the recovery is going well. Whether it's getting hit by a car or anything else traumatic or serious, or like you said, any negative event that happens that is related to running, how do you get back to running? I think it's really a two-step thing. I think the first thing is that you really have to want to get back to running. If you're not ready yet, if the wounds are still too raw, don't feel like you have to get back. Don't feel like you need to be rushed. So take your time, do something else, do other things to maintain your fitness or to pass the time to be of interest to you. And when you're ready, that's when you worry about starting to get back to running. And then, the second part of that. So once you've established that I am ready to run again, now how do I get back over the hurdle and get back at it? Just like anytime you come back from any type of injury or anybody that's new to the sport, first start short, start small, easy pace, things like that. But as far as more of the actual trauma of the event, maybe you're ready to start running, but you're not quite ready to be running on some of the busier streets, busier intersections, things like that, where the odds and the likelihood of getting hit by a car are a bit more, a bit higher than say if you were running on a trail or if you're running on a pedestrian only type of walkway, greenway type of thing that maybe your city has available to you. So that would be my next bit of advice. Maybe even, going into the treadmill. Yeah, can't believe I'm recommending a treadmill. But, whatever it is that can really separate the incident from the recovery process. So, if you're not ready to have to be on high alert all the time for cars and things like that, where can you run that you don't have to be, nervous every time a car approaches or every time you see the headlights or something like that, and find those places, ease back into running that way. And then once you're ready to dabble with running on the streets a little bit, go to quieter parts of town, things like that. So you can kind of gradually, get back into running and kind of disassociate the cars from what happened. And then, that's going to happen for everybody at their own rate, their own pace. It's going to take some people longer than others. Some people might jump right back in and have no problem. But, if you're struggling, those are the things that I would encourage you to do. Wait until you're really ready to go and then try to do something that's a little bit different from what caused the incident. So in this case, where can you run that's the odds of getting hit by a car are basically zero. Hit the trails, hit the treadmill, go to some pedestrian-only area where cars just don't even have access to it, and kind of get back into the sport that way. And then when you're good and ready, worry about running back on the streets or where cars are an issue again. Marsha, hope if that was a recent thing, I hope you're feeling better and getting back at it, in your own time frame. But again, just thoughts and prayers. Question from Michelle. She says, do you know anything about the Total Gym sponsored by Chuck Norris for overall strength training? Looks like you can really get a good workout. So funny you ask, Michelle, because I actually have a Total Gym sitting right here next to me in the office. I rarely use it. It was my neighbor had one and he was moving and he was like, hey, I know you're kind of into fitness and things like that. Do you want my Total Gym? And I was like, yeah, sure. Probably should have said no. But it does do a good workout. It's effective. It's just kind of a pain in the ass to use, to be quite honest. It takes up a lot of space. It's kind of tucked against the wall. So to do a lot of exercise, I'd have to kind of move it to the center of the room. And quite honest, I'm just too lazy to do that. I'd rather do my squats and my pull-ups and my push-ups, things like that, without having to rearrange the entire office every time I want to do a strength training workout. So I don't use it very much. It's good. It works. If you want one, I know a guy. I could probably hook you up. I don't know what the shipping would look like. That would be a hurdle we'd have to get over. But yeah, I mean, they're not bad. If it's kind of your thing, I don't say that with any judgment. It's just I don't think it's my thing, so I don't use it very often. It works, and you can definitely isolate different muscle groups, do things, and functional ranges of motion. I think it's probably better than a lot of weight machines, just because of the versatility that it provides. Like I said, it's just not really my thing. But thank you, Michelle, for the question. Monica has a couple of questions next coming. First one. Says, why is it that sometimes faster times that she runs faster on the treadmill, but those times don't translate to the pavement? She says, I get that you have a belt pulling you along, and so that makes a difference, and there's various elements outdoors, but she's just surprised how much slower she is when she's running outside versus on the treadmill. Yes, Monica, you're right that happens, and there's really a few different reasons that could be at play there. And probably the ultimate answer is some combination of a variety of factors. So the first thing that that I would really say is probably at play that may be going on is exactly what you said, that you know, in the treadmill, you have the belt, you have the motor that's moving the ground underneath you. So, you know, in theory, you could basically just hop up and down, which if you were doing that outside would leave you going nowhere. But you could basically hop up and down on a treadmill and, you know, you would be crossing, you know, going a distance, running a mile or whatever have you. So that factor is absolutely part of the equation. You know, is it going to make a huge difference, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes difference? Probably not, but it's going to play a part. Another factor is that, you know, when you're running outside, not only do you have the weather conditions, but you also have, you know, the fact that most likely you're not running on a perfectly flat route. There's going to be some ups, there's going to be some downs, some turns, things like that. And all those things are going to impact your pace a little bit. Also worth noting, I've heard it said, and the science seems to support it, that to get a little bit more accurate reading from the treadmill to outside, you should crank the elevation up to about 1% grade on the treadmill is a little bit more accurate to what it's like to run outside. So if you're running on it at a zero plane, if you're running on the treadmill flat, it's kind of the equivalent of running a slight downhill outside. So that could make a difference in how things are perceived or how the data actually shows up from running on the treadmill versus running outside when you're able to train outside. And last but not least, and I think this is probably the most likely situation, is that The treadmill, probably the calibration is off. I never, ever, ever trust the calibration on a treadmill or any type of indoor exercise equipment, on an elliptical, on a bike, on anything. I don't trust it because it's too easy for that thing to get off. And so you could be running on a treadmill with the pace set so that you're running a 9 minute mile and hey, I'm cruising. 9 minute mile, like that's great. And then you get outside and you run 10:15. You're like, what the hell is going on? Well, what could be going on, and what very, I would say probably most likely is going on, if you have a big discrepancy from inside to outside, is that, you know, your treadmill that says you're running a 9 minute per mile might only be, you know, it might be reading a mile, but it might only be like 0.85 or 87 of a mile. So, you know, 87% of the mile, and they're calling that a mile on the treadmill because the calibration gets a little bit off somehow over wear and tear, over some type of settings. And it happens often. If the treadmill isn't regularly serviced and regularly updated and regularly actually calibrated, which, you know, they can measure it by putting a mark on the belt and, you know, how long it goes around, things like that, especially if the belts get replaced. There's all kinds of things that can mess up the calibration. And so I wouldn't be surprised at all if your actual distance running on the treadmill isn't what the screen is telling you. So you think things are going great, but then you get outside, you run at the exact same level of intensity, exact same exertion level, and you're adding a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes to your pace for the mile. You know, a combination of factors, but I wouldn't be surprised if the calibration is a little bit off on those treadmills. And I've seen it firsthand from, you know, one treadmill or one elliptical to the one right next to it, you know, completely different numbers, not even close. And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's something that's going on. Next question from Monica. How is your half marathon and how is your wife's training going and are you coaching her? So, you know, my race was a couple months ago. It was the early part of February and it went really, really well. Ran a trail half marathon for those that aren't aware or haven't gone back through the archives yet, maybe new to the show. And I ran that off of 2 months of doing nothing but heart rate training, low intensity, base building. I had no idea how my race was going to go. And I was actually very, very, excited, very, very happy with how it went. I did an episode on that, Quick Tip, I believe. And I don't have the number right offhand. It's been a few weeks, but I will make sure that's linked up in the show notes if you want to hear all the nitty gritty details about how my experiment with heart rate training played out in the first race that I had ran after a base building period. But like I said, very happy with the performance. I ran a 155, which my goal was to run 2 hours. I paid no attention to my heart rate, no attention to my pace. I ran all by feel and ran 155 and actually could have gone 154 high. But Addison decided to run the last 100 meters or so with me, which is my three-year-old daughter. So I slowed way down so that we could run together and cross the finish line together. And it was well worth the 6 or 8 or 10 seconds that it cost me on race day. I'd make that trade any day of the week and twice on Sundays to cross the finish line with her. So my race went great. Rebecca's race also went pretty well. She ran the Princess Half Marathon at the end of February in Disney, and missed her PR by just a few minutes. Which there was a little bit of poor planning in that she was on pace, but of course, you know, at a race like any Disney race or any race with thousands of people, it's virtually impossible to run the tangents. So the different tangents, a bathroom stop, things like that, pushed her overall pace was right where she needed to be to PR. But because, you know, she added that extra quarter of a mile or 3/10 of a mile or whatever, it pushed her a couple minutes over the PR time. So it was a little bit disheartening, a little bit disappointing for her, but you know, it was I think she ran a good race. I was coaching her, and it's a little bit of a dynamic coaching your spouse. Kind of hard to crack the whip sometimes, but we're working on that, and now we're getting into a new routine for her, focusing a little more on some strength training, still maintaining the base, and looking to definitely PR in another half marathon somewhere probably this fall, winter, when the Florida weather cools down a little bit. We can highlight a race, but right now no races on tap for her. Things are, you know, kind of working on rebuilding that base and getting a little bit stronger, and no doubts that she'll be able to crush that half marathon, whatever the next one is. So thank you for asking, Monica, and hope things are going well for you as well. Next question comes from Jonathan, and him and his wife are expecting their first baby soon. So very much congratulations, mazel tov to you, my friend. And his question is, you know, they're both are runners and they're expecting the first baby in August. So still a few months away, but you know, starting to make those plans and whatnot. And asks, what features or specs are important when looking for a jogging stroller, and what kind of adjustments should we expect? All things related to running with a baby. So, like I said, first and foremost, congratulations. That's awesome. It's certainly, you know, you're in for a new experience. As any parent knows, there's no possible way to prepare for what having a baby does and means. All you can do is kind of hold on tight for the next 18 years, and really probably for the rest of your life, and just enjoy the ride. That said, from a running standpoint, I think the biggest, you know, first, when it comes to a stroller, get a bob. You know, they're awesome. You know, start looking now for, you know, mom swap deals, or, you know, the consignment shops, or any place that sells used, you know, used baby items. Don't freak out when it costs you $200 or $300 for a used stroller. Spend the money. Get a good stroller. I think Bob is great. If my friends from Jogalong would hurry up and finish prototyping and actually hit the market, I think that one is as good or better than the Bob as well. But we have a Bob. It works amazing. I don't worry about all the other techs and specs. Just make sure it has good tires. You know, that's important. Inflatable tires. It's going to glide like smooth as silk. Smooth as that soon-to-be baby's bottom that you're going to have. It'll just glide along the road. I'm pretty sure they even have bobs that are for like trail running. So if you and your wife tend to be more trail runners than road runners, you can, you know, maybe get one of those with just even bigger tires that are going to help to navigate the roots and the rocks and things like that. Now, obviously, you're probably not going to want to be on the most technical terrain with a little one, but you know, if you got some easier trails that you run, that would be an option. But yeah, I mean, don't worry too much about all of the other specs. That, you know, they all pretty much work out. Get good quality. And again, the Bob, I've never heard anyone say anything negative about the Bob other than the price. It's pricey. You're looking at $500-$600 for a new one. Pretty sure we got ours used for like $250. Well worth it. Well worth it. And it even is a great Disney World stroller, because I mean, it's so easy to push. You don't have to worry about wheels getting tangled. You know, some of the cheap, flimsier strollers, if you don't know, you'll figure it out. But the ones with the flimsy wheels, they get all twisted up and jacked up and jumping over curbs and things like that. You get a good Bob. Whew. Beautiful thing. Well worth it. But maybe, you know, kind of zooming out just a little bit, Jonathan, I would also encourage you and your wife to be very full of grace for yourself as it comes to running. You know, when you've got the little one in added into the mix, added into the household, you know, sleep's not going to be the greatest. You know, you which is going to, you know, you're going to be tired. it's going to impact performance. So, you know, run as you can, run to maintain sanity, run for time apart. You know, maybe take the baby and stay home and let your wife go for a run and vice versa. And if you're going to make a family thing, you know, you get the stroller, the car seat attaches into the stroller. It's perfectly safe. Took Addison many a time when she was crying and woke up early and took her for a run so Rebecca could get some extra sleep, things like that. But just have grace with yourself. You're not going to run as much as you want, probably. Your performance is probably not going to, you're not going to see as many gains as you might want. And that's okay. That's okay. The baby's going to get older. You know, once the baby starts sleeping through the night, maybe you'll get a little bit better routine going again. But just do your best to kind of adjust your lifestyles to the new baby and let running fit in as well. But as I've said to many a client and just many people in general, don't let running become something that adds more stress to your plate. So adding a new baby, stressful. Not the most easy, can be fairly easy. It can be pretty difficult, 6, 8, 12 months. Roll with the punches, do the best you can. If you miss a few runs, no big deal. But as you're able to run more and more, you'll get back into the sport, but just do your best. Again, congratulations on the soon to be new addition. Hope the last several months of pregnancy go well for your wife, and yourself, obviously, as you guys continue to prepare for the introduction of the newest member of the family. So congratulations, and hopefully that helps, Jonathan. And then the last question of the day coming from Miss Sharon. She says, she realized the other day that for the past several weekends in a row, she's done a run of at least half marathon distance, or, you know, a couple that were really, you know, 12.75, something like that, real close. And it got me thinking, I know I could never do a daily run streak and honestly don't even want to, but what about doing like a 13.1 plus mile long run every weekend, kind of making a streak of, you know, half marathon weekends over the course of, and just make that a regular occurrence of her training. Would that increase my risk for injury or burnout, or, you know, is it a good idea, bad idea? What are your thoughts on this idea of kind of having my own little unique take on a run streak? Sharon, I love it. I love it. I think it's a great idea. I don't think that provided that your base of fitness is to a level where you can handle that. And clearly it is, if that's what your long runs have been like lately. And again, knowing that we worked together a little bit, knowing that you were training for a marathon until something came up and you can't do the marathon run anymore, for very good cause, not an injury related thing, but a life thing. It was a no brainer decision. So, you know, could you stay at that half marathon distance almost indefinitely once a week ish? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to stop short of it saying I encourage you to do that, but I love the idea, because the next time then that you train for, insert race distance here, next time you train for a half marathon or a marathon or whatever, your base of fitness is going to be so much higher than if you allow your long runs to creep back to 5 or 6 miles a week, which nothing wrong with that. But now you're building from 5 or 6 miles to either 13.1 or 26.2, as opposed to building from a solid base of running 13.1 or 14 miles every week. You know, now you're basically your half marathon race ready all the time. And you're never more than 6 or 8 weeks out from being able to at least finish a marathon. And if you really wanted to race one hard, you've got a real head start on a lot of people with their training, with where they're coming from. So I love the idea. I'm all for it. Listen to your body. You know, if you need to take a week off, if the weather's terrible, if you're just not feeling it that day, you're sick, whatever, you know, I would never say I'm married to the idea of a run streak, but you can make that fairly consistent. And you know, all things being equal, you do that every week. I see nothing but positives for you, Sharon. So, yes, do it. Go for it. I love the idea. And that, my friends, is that. So thank you all for the questions. That was pretty good. And for 15 questions, we're still coming in under an hour, which might be a new record for me. Well, I don't know. I guess I've done that before, but try to stay focused, on track, on task this week. And that's what having a lot of questions will do for me. It keeps me from rambling too much. So that's good. But again, thank you all for the questions. And if you want to join the group, come on down. We have a lot of fun. Troll me during the weekly live videos on Friday evenings. All kinds of stuff. Content posted every day from me, and then also a lot of people joining in. You see Isla's posting all the things that she's doing. Angela chips in quite a bit. Trying to think of people offhand. Melody's a regular contributor. She asked a couple of questions this week as well, or this month as well. And you got Jen chiming in, and Shelby, and a whole host of people. It sounds like I'm listing all kinds of gosh. Whatever. But anyway, I don't know what I'm trying to say other than it's a good group. And like I said, the goal is to make it the best running group on Facebook. Meh, maybe too ambitious. I don't know. But I think we got a good thing going. If you want to come join the party, DizRuns.com/Facebook is the place to be. And like I said, that's where the call for questions goes every month. Around the middle of the month, I put a post out. What are your questions? You throw them down. I'll answer them just like I did today. So thank you again to everybody who left questions. Thanks again also to Health IQ for sponsoring today's episode. Once again, healthiq.com/DizRuns to get yourself a quote on life insurance. Again, probably going to be the best quote you can find. So if you're in the market for life insurance, you'd be kind of foolish to not investigate what Health IQ might have in store for you. And if you let them know you heard about it here on DizRuns Radio, sadly, it's not going to save you anything, but it does kind of give me a little tick mark, and it's a great way to support the show. So thank you guys for everybody who's visited healthiq.com/DizRuns or talked to agents and let them know that you heard about it here on the show. So with that, better go ahead and put a bow on this thing before we do get to the hour mark. But thank you guys for listening. Hope you had a great week, a great month, and a great start of 2018. You know, we're one quarter down, three quarters to go. Make these last three quarters count, y'all, and it starts today. Start moving forward from today to really continue making progress for the rest of the year. And if there's anything I can do to help you along the way, Facebook group, coaching, whatever it might be, please reach out. Always happy to engage in those conversations and offer whatever I can. So until then, please be well, take good care. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk soon. See you guys.